This episode of Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor is brought to you by the awesome people over at Apex Entertainment. Apex, located in Marlboro, is located right off Route 495 on Route 20. It's 100,000 square feet of pure fun for all ages. There's always perfect weather at Apex Entertainment, and it's an ideal location for a birthday party, corporate outing, or special event. Or, you know what, just to go and have some fun. Attractions include 30 bowling lanes, multi-level indoor go-kart track, laser tag, bumper cars, rope course, and arcade. Go check out apexentertainment.com. Razor and I thanks Apex Entertainment for all of their support. I got to admit, I don't normally get excited. Might not be the word. Energized maybe is the word to go to practice normally over at Warrior. Albeit it's part of the job. I've always enjoyed it. I just love being in the rink. But I did get a little bit energized and a tad excited when I went to Bruins skate practice earlier today, New Year's Eve day, 11 a.m. at Warrior. And two reasons why, Razors. We welcome into Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor. A special brew. We're going to get it going as the Bruins have not been on the ice since December 16th playing a game. Last we saw them, they were losing to the Islanders 3-1 and had lost their previous game to Vegas. What was that, 4-1, I think? But reason, Razor, that I got interested and energized. First of all, two, they're coming back to play. New Year's Day. And then January 2nd, two games back-to-back matinees. But two, we saw some line changes from Bruce Cassidy. So long-winded intro, as I am wont to do. Are you energized by what with the Bruins coming back and the line changes? And we will get into the line changes specifically in a moment.
Certainly energized to have hockey back. There's no question about that. It's the 15 days has felt like 2 months, really. The 16th of December feels like a different planet. And so that's exciting to get everybody back. It's exciting to know that we're going to have hockey for the next month, knowing that 13 COVID cases are off the books for the Bruins and they're back at it. And yeah, the line changes. I'm excited for it. I'm energized for it. I'm still a little bit hesitant to go all in because I want to see it go for 5 games, 4 games, 3 games, just not one period like we're used to seeing. So hopefully them doing it over a long break like this means that they're committing to it for a little while and going to run with it as long as it, more than just the 30 minutes that we've seen prior to Bruce Cassidy making these decisions.
All right. So, before we get into the specific line changes, which I'm assuming most of the listeners here of Brew know, but regardless, we'll get to them specifically. You mentioned the 13 COVID cases. We're hoping that the Bruins obviously don't have any more to come. I think that's almost a near impossibility right now. I'm not a gambler, I would say, Razor, regularly, but I would say that odds are is that one or two guys are still going to get infected by the new variant that's around. Hopefully, obviously asymptomatic. Hopefully it also with the new CDC guidelines, it's a 5-day instead of a 10-day issue. We have practice taxi squads now. We've got a lot of stuff that I don't even really want to go into because we're looking to do just a quick 20 to 22 minute show here. But the good news is that because the Bruins have had so many players go through it, in theory, they should be okay, at least for the time being. The better news would be that everybody's vaxxed, and that also the other thing is that this Omicron variant seems to be moving through quickly and then tapering off in other places too. Let's hope that's the case. To your point, Razor, about seeing these line changes. And here are the specific line changes. Craig Smith goes with Bergeron and Marchand. Pastrnak goes with Haula in the middle and Hall on the left. Coyle shifts to what we'll call the third line with DeBrusk on the left and Foligno on the right. And then Nosek takes his fourth line center spot with Frederick, who slides from middle to the left on the left, and then Lazar on the right. So that means Bleed is out, Kuhlman's out for now. Your D pairs are still, when I say relatively the same, it's the same six more or less that we've gotten used to. John Moore is back up. He's the extra. So you've got Riley and you've got Forbert and you've got McAvoy and Grizz, all the regular characters. Cliffy's up there and Carlo back after being on protocol list. So I'm going to be curious to see what he does for the pairs with the D, but more than anything up front, I don't know if you're going to get three or four games, Razor. I don't, but I'll take two, bud. I'll take two games, and you've got Buffalo on Saturday. You've got Detroit on Sunday. And to me, that's a great start. It's not four or five games that we both have talked about looking to see, but two games against teams, not that you should be, because they've had a hard time beating Detroit. Razor, the speed of Detroit, I think, has been something.
But they're good. Detroit's good.
Yeah, and they're good. But I'd like to think that the players perhaps want to see this go for these, you know, 120 minutes of action, so to speak, as well. I felt like it energized them at practice, too, this morning.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, on top of just getting back to normal and playing and being around everybody. And yeah, that it does change your mind up a little bit. It gives you a little motivation and a little bit of jump with some new faces, some more things to talk about in practice. You're not just going through the motions and doing your normal 3-on-2. You're actually digging in, focusing a little bit. All right, where do you want to go? A little more communication. What do you want to do in this situation? And that's probably a good thing for this team right now, coming off a really long break for them in the middle of the season, just to reset, refocus, really communicating with each other and getting on the same page. So they're not going to want to go through 10 days of this as a player. They've been practicing for 6-7 days and then have lines changed after one period. That's just exactly. As frustrating as not doing it. So that's why this is important, because they're working really hard. They're all watching video together, I'm sure, the last few days, getting on the same page. So you have to give them a little bit of rope to figure it out while they're out there on the ice in a game situation.
And I know that a lot of the...
What do you think? Do you like it? Do you like the lines? Change-up. Do you like the idea of where they've slotted everybody?
I do. I'm trying to be the eternal optimist here. I do. And I understand that, you know, like beginning of a season, Razor, high expectations, right? And freshness and everything. And this is what I thought was going to happen. And I've been wrong on more than a few of those so-called predictions or hopes. But here I am with this reset. I do like what I've seen. If only because I think you get guys slotted better. I do think Coyle is slotted better in this, what we'll call a 3C slot. I don't think when is Charlie's been, in our eyes, good. Does that mean that it means it has to be as a second line center? Does it mean that it's going to work with Taylor Hall? No, because it hasn't nearly as much. But Coyle is done. I'd love to see him win some more faceoffs, but I'm not going to get off a tangent too much here. But I think he's been good. I think you too. We've talked about
being
good. But
I agree. He's doing what he does.
Right.
And that's, you know, there is a ceiling on that.
Exactly. So I like him in that slot in the third. I mean, does that line produce? I think that's it. My biggest question. I think that the top two lines will produce. I think Nosek and Lazar will produce. I want to see Frederick play like he did as a center. I want to see his feet moving more. I know you get caught on the wing sometimes. You can get hit by the wall, so to speak. You know, you fade, you slide yourself, your bum too close to the wall, and it can limit you to, move, big boy. Move. Be first on forecheck. Finish hits. Bring the fight, so to speak, to your play. And I want to see that. But I'm curious about the third line. Will that have enough oomph when it's all said and done? Will Jake DeBrusk play interior enough? Will Nick Foligno be able to, you know, do more of what he talked about wanting to do, Razor, when the before the pause happened? I don't know. But there's going to be a lot of talk about getting Taylor Hall going, and rightfully so. What is it, 1 5-on-5 goal this year? Not enough. But I also look at it as going getting David Pastrnak going. I do. I know he's hit post, 8 of them. 7 posts and 1 crossbar this year. But I look to get him going too. The big question mark for me, bud, how does Eric Halla handle the spot in the middle between them? That to me is the way I look at it too.
It is. And that's going, and again, Halla going up against second line centers in the Eastern Conference and first pairings. A lot of times that second line sees a lot of first pairing minutes as well. Mm-hmm. So that's his challenge. But I, to your point, I think that comes down to Hall and Pastrnak driving that line now in the wings. Hall is going to be able to keep up. And I listen, Hall has had so many opportunities this season and breakaways and missed opportunities. You know, he could easily have 6, 7, 8 goals right now as well when you look at it in hindsight. And I think he will relish this opportunity. I think this is what he wanted coming to the Bruins. I would imagine when he signed this contract, he's looking at, like, I'm going to beat Coyle out, and I can be that second-line center. I would promise you that's what he was thinking going into it, signing that contract, and now he has his opportunity, and now he has not only Hall on his left, but now he gets Pastrnak on the right. He probably did not expect that. Massive opportunity for him, and if that line creates just a little bit of spark, then it's a massive bonus, big bonus for the Bruins. So I like the line. I'd rather see Halla there than Coyle, to be honest. I like that idea. I like you talked about, slotting Coyle on the third line and Smith being on that first line. I think that fits
That's fine. What
Patrice and Marchand wants to do. He's more than smart enough, more than capable to shoot the puck and score goals on that line as well.
And I know that, you know, you can't base too much on practice, but I can tell you, the energy was now, a lot of it has to do with not having played for 2 weeks. I get that. Mm-hmm. But the energy at Skate Today, Razor, was palpable. It was visceral. You could feel it and see it in the hooting and the hollering. It was not your typical regular season practice. Craig Smith, very vocal, sniping early on, excited. And listen, it is what it is. But I do think that this will provide a spark for this team, at least for the short term. Does it sustain itself? I who the hell knows? I hope so. But even if you find one good pair or one good line that comes out of it, you hope that you can sustain it and it creates a mid-season spark for a team that needs one significantly.
What do you think of the timing of this? I was thinking about this the other day, and it feels like it should be mid-season, but these guys have only played 26 games.
I know.
And I think this break is the timing of it is really good for them now that there's no Olympics, that these guys got this early enough and that they have 7 extra games on everybody to really get into a step. And so I was thinking about how positive this break is. As soon as the Olympics are canceled, they have enough time now to play a bunch of games, but they get to reset like you talked about. They get that energy where had they have played 7 or 8 more games like some of these other teams in December, let's say, and had that low energy, those COVID issues over and over, I feel like it's a big advantage to have this reset when they got it. What do you think?
I think in a year of holy shit, we don't know really what we're talking about. And I don't mean me and you. I mean, just in general in the world, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think on paper, so to speak, using that term, it works out well for the Bruins. Do I really believe it though, Razor? I don't freaking know, man, because just how messed up everything. I'd like to think this is going to help them. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think it. But maybe I'm just been living too much, especially the last couple of weeks of, oh God, what other, you know, what's the next shoe to drop, so to speak. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, look, I'm telling you, I was really feeling good leaving practice earlier today. And I normally try and take nothing out of practice, so to speak, you know what I mean? But so I guess I do feel that same way. Like the vibe I think is good. I think it's it is a little bit of a bonus for this team. But on the other hand, I'm like, I'm so too cynical now, and I've learned to just literally who the F knows what's going to happen. And it takes away maybe some positivity, so to speak. And I'm not always the happiest dude around too. I can easily find the negative and, you know, winning the lottery, you know, you got to pay the taxes, right? You know what I mean? So to speak. But when it's, listen, hopefully with this team in health, and where they're at, and they've got to figure out, they got to figure out the DeBrusque thing. Don't they have to now? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's a rumor out there, and I don't even really want to dive into it. You know, it was put out in the Twitter world, the social media world about a possible trade with the Edmonton Oilers. Let's not even dive specifically into that one, but don't they have to deal with this sooner rather than later? I mean, you've got to.
I agree. You know. Yeah, I think so. And I think it's for the same reason that I'm bringing up the break and when it is and having 56 games. I think this is a good time to try and get that done and get that solidified, because you have so much ahead of you that you can get a guy, get a person, get a couple players in here and give yourself some room to really get them into the lineup, get them acclimated, get them into the culture and step it up. So if you're going to make that deal, I think sooner is better for this group. And hopefully with GMs sitting on their hands for the last 12 days, just making phone calls over and over again and going over your lineup and really digging through all the players that are playing, not only in the NHL, but the AHL and what's mm-hmm. going over on in Europe right now. These guys probably have a much better handle than they've ever had at this point in the season on what's out there and what's available. And I think at some point you have to, you pull that trigger and have some conviction in what you want and what you want this team to look like.
Yeah. And what you need to make, you need to make it happen. I think if only it's that proverbial dark cloud is not the right fair way to describe it. Gray cloud. It's not dark. It's not ominous. It's not, you know, devastating type of thing, but it's gray. It's gray matter. Who the hell likes gray matter? Nobody. You know what I mean? It's that malaise. You do something. It just because as good as a person as Jake is, everybody's still going to talk about it. It's going to be there. The media is going to talk. It's just, I think you have to move it, because you got to say eventually it's the old, you know, poop or get off the pot type of thing, isn't it? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
It is. The other thing is, if I'm Don Sweeney, I really, really want Hall and Pasternak to work this week. That makes my job so much easier. If these guys get on a roll here for the next 2 weeks, they play really well together. First line. Now I'm looking at it. All right. Now I can get away with maybe going with the defenseman that we've talked about, right? I'm not sure if Don Sweeney really knows what he needs to get from Jake DeBrusque with this team only playing 26 games, kind of wavering in the wind. Does he want to go back end? Does he want to go with a second line, third line guy? I think that also makes a decision. And I think thinking about it that way, Don might need 10 more games to really make a decision which side of the ledger, what kind of player he wants to get. We don't know what this team is. So how does Don know what this team is and what kind of player he needs right now?
I'm going to disagree, Bart, but because he knows he needs another center. He knows he needs another D. So you go out there and you get the best. I think I liked your term, with conviction. Go out there and make your decision on who's going to be that best guy that's available right now. Otherwise, if you keep waiting and waiting and waiting, I don't know. I understand time is on your side, so to speak, because of the pause that they've had. But I think you have to make a move.
56 games left.
I know. I still think you make a move. You've known, Razor, you've known that this guy wants out probably since summer.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Probably last year. So probably last deadline.
Right. So, I mean, I think we know what you're going to get out of DeBrusque. I don't think you want to. I just think you need to do the move because – okay, on the other hand, you say, Razor, that second line, if they're going, it makes Johnny's job easier. But then if the third line's not going, it doesn't help you move Jake. So, I mean, if you have a team right now that needs to change something in their top, we'll call it 6-9, and if they need to make something happen and they've got something they can move, I don't know. I'm done. I want to make the move. You've made it through the freeze. You're ready to go. You're trying some different things. Keep trying. You know that the kid's not going to be a part of your team much longer. I don't know. Yeah. I would do the move sooner than later myself. Another move that is happening that we've talked about happening sooner rather than later, it feels sooner rather than later, is going to be Tuukka Rask. It feels to be sooner than, I mean, I thought Feb, if only because of Olympic break, et cetera. Obviously, that's not happening. That probably moves it up too. I talked about this just the other day, though. I was doing a hit on Nesson. Do you think the Bruins, you said 56 games left. Do you almost think, Razor, that there's potential for them at times to carry three goalies, given the amount of games that they are going to have and how with travel and everything, and we don't even know what their February schedule is going to be, that this may actually work into their favor more than I realize. I won't say you realize. Because now, of course, Swayman can go up and down to the American League simply, 48-minute drive, no problem. But now you're talking three guys. You may have to have a three-man rotation, so to speak, just with the amount of games that you could have left in the season.
And you have a taxi squad that you can use Jeremy Swayman on. So you can get around cap issues just by putting him on the taxi squad. If Providence doesn't play till Friday afternoon, you put him on the taxi squad Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, gets his practice in at the NHL level. If you need him to go play, then he drives down, plays Friday night, and then Sunday in Boston.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have a lot of wiggle room now because of the taxi squad to be able to put him there, save some cap money, still get his reps in, still get his development in. So it does help in a massive way, and there's no reason why they can't have all three guys somewhat around. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all practicing on the ice together. There's going to be a lot of games. You're not going to always bring guys on the road together. You know, you're not bringing Swayman on every road trip, I wouldn't imagine. You're going to get him as many games as you possibly can. The other thing, it's interesting, and this is a very, so hypothetical, but it's kind of fun to think about. Do you think if the Bruins knew that there would only be 26 games played before Tuukka Rask could come back, would they have went out and signed someone else? Now, they thought there was going to be like 40, 45 games played before Tuukka could come back. Now it's 26. Do you think in hindsight they might not have went out and got a guy and went with two young guys just for 26 games, knowing they could hold their head above water and then Tuukka comes back? I'd be really interested to see, again, very hypothetical, but Tuukka's got a lot of season left now.
Right. If you're saying, you know, using that crystal ball.
If Tuukka could have come back in November, let's say.
Now, if he could come back in November, no, they would not have gone out and signed somebody else. I don't think. Yeah. I think there was a lot of question of would he be able to come back in after the Olympic break? How would he handle the surgery? And the reality that they felt that it's just too long. It's too long to go 48 games with two guys, because then you have, in theory, potentially no chance of making the playoffs. Just tread water and stay in the playoff race. But no, using 26 games, no. I would say it would be more like 30 to 35, probably still no. But 40-plus, no way. They would have gone out and still signed somebody. But no, 26 games, I don't think they would have I don't think they would have gone and signed Ullmark to a four-year deal.
Yeah, I kind of think that way as well. So it's interesting that they're in this spot that's completely unforeseeable, but just interesting that Tuukka's has the ability to play 30 games this season. None of us thought that was going to be possible, but he could be back for 50 games, and it's going to be fascinating how they yo-yo this and how much they play. I do know they're excited to have Tuukka back. They're excited to be able to roll him over the boards and know exactly what they're going to get. They really are.
They've got to be excited for that. I can't imagine, as good as Ullmark and Swayman have been so far handling it publicly, I can't imagine it's going to be, you know, all peaches when down the road. I'm not saying anything bad is going to, but I can't imagine it's going to be simple, Razor, because athletes like to be. They want to play. They want to be part of it. Swain, the easy thing will be to move him to the American League or the taxi squad, which does significantly help them. There's no question it does. But how do they keep all three involved in a way that satiates that burning desire that NHL players have? That, to me, will end up being the big question.
Exactly. No question. And I think everyone, you know, you have to recognize too, like, Jeremy Swayman still recognizes and still has the feeling that he's not really an NHLer. You have that as a young goaltender, and you're still fighting tooth and nail. You're still on a two-way contract. So he's been in this position knowing that he could go to the minors since he's been here.
Yeah,
you're fighting every day as that young goaltender. So it isn't the end of the world for having him go down there and play. It's not going to... Carey Price went down when he was 23. There's guys that have gone back and forth. Roberto Luongo went down and played games down in the minors until he was 22, 23 years old. And I've been in that. I was in that boat too. I played 12 years. I was up and down my first, even in my third, fourth year pro. That's when I was still bouncing and still trying to make it. And it's, you recognize it and you understand it and you have to go play games wherever they tell you to go play. So it really... It's not the end of the world for Jeremy Swayman to play games in the AHL this year. It really isn't.
Couldn't agree more.
It's fine.
But it's totally fine. And you've been saying this forever, since this whole Tuca thing became reality, possibility even. However, it's still, how do you communicate it, manage it? That's all I'm saying.
That's right.
That's right. Sending him there is the right thing. It's the easiest thing too, but it's the right thing. However, you still have to manage it. It's, you know, the best coaches, management in any business, it's how you communicate it. And it's not always going to be perfect, but just keep communicating and I think it'll be all right. Real quick, let's wrap it up with this. I know, and you've had time now to digest it, a week or so. The NHLers not going to the Olympics, right or wrong thing. I'm going to start. Absolutely still the right thing. I know some guys are upset. There's one with the Bruins that was very outspoken about it in 63. I still think it's the right thing that they did not going to the Olympics. I understand that it's more the league, though, that had to say than the players ended up doing. But I do feel like, Razor, that the league or the players could have worked with the PA more to make it more of a – to me, that's what the PA's there for. Right. That's what it's there for, to make things happen. And when it's all said and done, though, I'm telling you, I still think it was the right thing not to go to the Olympics. I do.
It's the right thing. There's no question for the National Hockey League. It's the right thing. I mean, we could do four shows on players and NHLPA and NHL and where trust lies with each of those organizations and where guys think discussions are had. I mean, I went through a lockout in 04 and you talk about back room conversations in the PA. I mean, it was not good. So, I talked about this. I told you guys were pissed. Guys are not happy they're not going to the Olympics. They feel it was taken away. They feel like the league duped them a little bit. They don't trust how it was brought down. And that's probably just as much the PA as is the NHL. So Brad Marchand, what he said, I would say 95, 96% of the guys that were going to play in the Olympics feel exactly that same way. They're not happy. They're not excited the fact that they don't get to do the Olympics. But it's the right thing. Because the NHL needs to keep going. They need to get the revenues that they all need to get so they don't have to pay 50% in escrow. And they have to not go to China in the middle of February. So it is the right thing to do. But there's no question this is going to certainly last a little bit. This is going to be a summer topic at PA meetings. This is going to be a summer topic at NHL PA meetings and all the way through. This is going to be something that will cause a problem at some point for a lot of players, and they won't forget about this one. They think they got hosed, just like Brad Marchand said.
I get it. And I understand their disappointment. I respect the heck out of that. I understand they want to do best on best. You know, I've never been a big time supporter of the NHLers at the Olympics. And I think there should just be a big time World Cup every 2 years for sure. 4 years. I mean, 4 years for sure. I would take it every 2 years. The other solution, I know people have talked about this, hockey in the summer. Fine. Do it. Do it at Summer Olympics. Do it. I'm going to try and take the other road traveled here. Yes, they might be pissed off. But this is a perfect opportunity not to create a problem, but to create huge dialogue to say, all right, this is never going to happen again. How do we ensure that? How do we get best on best to where it benefits us as players, satisfies us as players, makes money for the league, benefits us, gives us the experience that we're all searching for? This is what they've got to come up with. Use this as that catapult to figure it the heck out. I get the players are pissed off. I understand that. However, it would have been a freaking catastrophe, I think, if they went to the Olympics this year.
It could have been. So the issue is, and I know we want to go, but what you just said, make the league make more money. And that's that. I hear that. And as a player, I'm like, forget that. I go to the Olympics. I make more money. I personally make more money. Forget about the league. Forget about everybody else. I make more money because you know what? I get to sign autographs of me winning a gold medal for the rest of my life at $20,000 a shot at a memorabilia show. So that's why players are pissed because all they hear is, oh, we're going to make the league more money. Well, what about us making money for ourselves? And so it's funny because I heard you say that, and right away I think I get my back up. Like, why is the league making more money?
I think of if the league's making more money and the players make less escrow payments, that the players make more money too.
But the Olympic guys are now subsidizing everybody else in the league. They don't get nearly as big of a cut with a World Cup because it gets separated between 700 people rather than just the 60 guys that are going over there.
Well, by the way, I'm also not saying don't go to the Olympics. I'm saying do the summer idea too. Figure out a way how you can do it. Take this opportunity to figure out a way to make something work. And I understand, totally get this, that the players are pissed off because they feel the league duped them a bit. But yet, it was in the agreement with the PA, just so you know this, right, Ray? You know it. If the schedule was materially altered, that this could be a trigger for this scenario. And it was. And I know that Bettman is looked upon as kind of being the Smithers at times, sitting there, you know, twiddling his fingers and stuff. I get it. And at times it's not appealing. I get that too. I don't disagree. I also look at it and say, holy shit, there's been a lot of good stuff that's happened in the last 10, 15, 20 years that has grown for the league. So nothing is perfect. A give and take has to happen. But what I would love in my utopian scenario here is to figure out a way. So if you want to make the Olympics work, it's going to, as far as I'm concerned, it has to be summer. It has to be. It has to be summer. That's the only way you guarantee it happening, Razor. And the world,
it makes it tough. Yeah.
These guys that are all Olympians play as many games. I've got kids on my team that play as many games in the summer as they do now during the winter. My point is everybody's used to summer hockey too. I actually think ratings will be fine, if not even better, in summer, because you're going to have more Summer Olympic people that say, holy shit, let me see what this hockey thing's about and try it out. And you know what? During the summer, I'm up all hours of the night. So if they're playing in China and the games are live at 1 a.m., boom, I'm going to watch as well. You know? So that's my rant.
Well, I don't mind it. I don't think the players would mind it either. It's fine. Middle of the summer, family gets to go on vacation. Most of the summer places are really nice places to go. You're in South Africa or you're in Paris or Los Angeles and the whole crew gets to go. That's fun. So I think it'd be fine.
I know basketball is considered a summer sport because you play it outside normally, right? Bullshit. You play hockey outside normally too.
No, they did it because they didn't want to screw up the NBA season. Right. That's why they put it in the summer.
Right. That's my point. Yeah. So now,
no, for sure.
Bring it in for crying out loud. Just bring it in. Go play. And people are going to say, well, some of these venues, these places where they do summer hockey or they do summer Olympics don't have rinks. Do it.
They spend billions of dollars on Olympics.
Right. Build rinks.
Facilities. They could easily put a rink in. You only need one rink because you don't need figure skating and everything else. You put one rink in and play all the games there.
Right. Last thing about it, though, and then we're going to wrap it up. I guarantee you many of the Winter Olympiads, which do not generate bids as high as Summer Olympiads, are going to completely bitch. So that there won't be hockey there for revenue. However, maybe there's some way.
The big draw.
Right. That's the big draw. That and figure skating. So
it's always money, Billy. It's always money. It always comes down to it.
I know. All right, speaking of money, this is money. We get it in, a special brew here. We went about 12 minutes more than I said would. RC is probably like, geez, guys, shut up. But anyways, it's been too long. Tons of stuff. I hope everybody had a very wonderful as possible holiday season, especially a Merry Christmas. We talked Hanukkah earlier. That was like a month ago now, it was. Christmas last week. I hope everybody was able to enjoy it as healthy and as safely as possible. Razor and I are going to be back with our next brew after Sunday's game. So the Bruins have games Saturday and Sunday, New Year's Day and January 2nd, both 1 o'clock games. Buffalo Saturday, Detroit Sunday. Razor and I will get together to talk about, break it down, especially all the lineup changes that we saw from practice on Friday. And we'll break those two games down, and then we'll fill you in on the upcoming Morning Brew shows. Everybody have a wonderful New Year's Eve. Again, wherever you are, enjoy it. Be safe, be smart, be healthy. To RC, the man behind the screen, to Razor in front of it, buddy, have a wonderful time tonight. I'm making chicken wings for the kids. It's very exciting, incredibly exciting tonight
here at
the
Jaffee
House. How about you guys? Anything? Anything planned? Keg stands anywhere?
Oh, yeah, we're going to fire some steaks, hang out. So be nice and quiet. I will not see the ball drop in Times Square.
No, I will not see anything drop except my eyelids probably at 11 o'clock. Be wonderful. That's going to wrap up Morning Brew with Jaffee and Razor. Again, thank you to Apex Entertainment for providing a partnership for this show. Razor and I'll be back in just a couple of days. Everybody, happy, healthy New Year. And really, especially if you had a few too many to drink of that other beverage on New Year's Eve. Enjoy your coffee on New Year's Eve.